School is about to start back up, so we're sitting down with a group of teachers to find out what's on their minds. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Being a teacher in South Florida can be challenging, whether it's pay or cost of living. Different surveys and polls place Florida, especially South Florida, on the low end of places best for the profession. With classes about to start for the spring term, we've gathered a group of high school teachers from around the region. They're joining us to share their thoughts, their concerns, and their hopes for their profession, but mostly for their students and the future. And we invite you to share your thoughts. If you want to be or are currently a teacher, or you used to be a teacher, well, join us. Call 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can also find us on Facebook at WLRN Sundial. That's all coming up on the show today on Sundial. First, the news.
To quote from Whitman, "Oh me, oh life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, what good amid these, O me, O life? Answer, that you are here, that life exists and identity, that the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. That the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse."
And that cut is from the movie Dead Poets Society, the late Robin Williams playing the English teacher John Keating. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. That is still one of my favorite all times. He inspired his students with this untraditional, even bizarre teaching style. And I got to say, I was in high school when this movie came out, and it inspired me. And when I was in college, I actually found myself having to decide being a teacher or going into broadcasting. I remember a lot of my classmates became teachers. I made the choice I made. I have no regrets. But that's all changing, because from 2010 to last year, the number of college students in Florida seeking teaching degrees has dropped by almost 30%. Nationwide, there's a teacher shortage, and that's hitting South Florida. But what's it like being a teacher these days? I think about that. What if I had chosen differently? And what's it like being a teacher in South Florida? Today on Sundial, we're going to devote the entire hour to education, but we're not going to be talking to administrators, union reps, or, you know, any school district superintendent. Today, it's all about teachers. We're joined by one teacher from each district in South Florida, joining me now here in the downtown studios. I have Barbara Kinosh. She's from Mast Academy in Miami-Dade County. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also joining me is Dalia Montes de Oca. She is from Western High School in Broward County. Dalia, a pleasure.
Thank you.
And Marlene Enriquez. She is from Suncoast High School in Palm Beach County. I went to Palm Beach County, obviously class of 91, Wellington Wolverines. Go Wolverines. You're the Chargers, though.
Thank you. Go Chargers.
All right. And joining us from the studios of Key West is Casey Subletex Marks from Key West High School. Casey, I knew I was going to do that to you. I apologize.
It's okay. It happens. It's Sublet Marks.
Sublet Marks. Thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us as well. And again, we want to hear from you. If you're a teacher, if you're thinking about becoming a teacher, if you've retired from teaching, maybe you said, I'm done with this, and you left. Why? We want to hear from you. 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can find us on Twitter at WLRN Sundial. You can also find us on Facebook. Again, just look up WLRN Sundial. All right. So I played that clip because it did. It inspired me. I remember that was it's still one of my favorite movies. I thought, I want to do that. And the reason I thought that is because, well, this guy is touching people's lives. He's helping people. I want to do that. I almost became a teacher, but I want to know from you, all of you, why did you become teachers? Marlene, why?
I have to be honest. My principal, Miss Elizabeth Marks, this is way back in Nicaragua, she thought that I was suited to be a Spanish teacher, and it was my only way out at that time. I was 17, graduating from high school, and I went to Managua to study to become a Spanish teacher. And once I got my foot in there, I really loved it. So I'm really appreciative of her.
You knew from the beginning, I want to do this?
Maybe, because I used to help. I used to help out with classrooms, and I did help out with Sunday school, et cetera, stuff that you do back in small countries. And so I already knew what it was like to be among children and how to connect with them.
Barbara, why did you become a teacher?
Mine was more practical, and I was like the typical citizen: June, July, August, Christmas break, spring break. It's got to be pretty easy, you know. When I remembered my days as a student, I was a pretty good student, but I had three kids. I was coming from retail, had to work on Saturdays. They kept telling me I was in the fashion office at Bert Ines.
Oh my gosh, Bert Ines.
Exactly. I ended my career there as youth activities coordinator in charge of teen board. And I'm really honest with you as far as, you know, thinking, hey, this will be a pretty good gig, but I can't say that I actually wanted to do it. I wanted to make sure that I was there for my kids, because working retail, you don't have Saturdays off and comp time and things like that.
Okay, so for practical reasons, but then when you stepped into the classroom...
Oh, it was chaos. It was mayhem. I compare it to... I was teacher of the year, and I played like little bits of music when I was speaking, when I was giving my speech. And I started with the morning suite, thinking, oh, June, July, August, you know, very calm, beautiful. And it was more like, as soon as that first bell rang, it was, who let the dogs out? Ooh, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
it was wild. It was wild. And it wasn't anything. And I thought, what have I gotten myself into? But I was also, when I was hired, they were looking for teachers in Dade County, and it was called the TRIP program. So they were looking for people outside of education to come into education and to teach in critical shortage areas. And English happened to be one of them. But it was not 29 years ago, let me tell you, it was a little chaotic in public education. And we have cleaned up our act, I think, so much, and we've done a great job. And I've actually got to witness that. But it was not easy. And I question myself every day.
Practical reasons. Okay. All right. Dahlia, what got you into this?
I always wanted to be a teacher ever since I was little. I even asked my mom for a whiteboard one Christmas. But because of certain reasons, I studied...
Where do you think that came from?
My teachers in elementary school.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, they were that inspirational. They were like, I'm going to be a teacher.
Yes, I was that teacher's pet in elementary school.
Wow, okay. So you were one of those students. I didn't like those students.
Yes.
Okay, that's all right.
But then I studied sports medicine, and I became a certified athletic trainer, and I got hired by Broward Health. And when I went to Western High to meet the principal, he told me he wanted a full-time teacher. So I said, okay, I got my teacher certification, and I've been teaching ever since.
How long is that now?
14 years.
14 years. You remember that first day?
A little bit.
Oh, come on. First day ever that you're a teacher. Did you know, like, okay, I'm glad I made this choice?
It was hard.
Yeah?
Yes. Teaching Algebra 1, yes.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to figure out what you're not telling me, but all right. Casey, what about you?
Well, if I'm being honest, this was always the backup plan. That's now become the standard plan.
Okay.
You know, I always thought, well, I'll teach while I get my master's, and, you know, then I'll do something else, and I'll always have my teaching degree to fall back on. And I've kind of found it hard to leave. I think it's just because I love school. I've always loved school, and I have just an incredible passion for education.
What was that first day like for you? Did you know that was it for you? Did you understand? You knew that, okay, I picked the right thing.
You know, I can't remember too much about the first day.
Wait a minute. How long have you been teaching?
9 years.
Okay, come on. You don't have the most.
You know, I thought I'd be like Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds.
Okay, well, there you go.
Nope. Yeah, it didn't really pan out that way. I was scared because I was young, you know, and I was teaching high school. I mean, I was like 23, and some of these kids were 18, and even some of them were 19. There's not that much of an age difference between us, and it kind of felt like I was being thrown into shark-infested waters, you know.
Oh, the shark-infested waters. All right. 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Again, talking about education today, talking with teachers. Want to find out what's really going on in education here in South Florida. We'd love to hear from you. If you're a teacher currently, or if you're thinking about becoming a teacher, or again, maybe you've retired, or you quit, you walked away from it. We'd like to hear your thoughts. Again, 800-743-9576, or find us on Facebook. WLRN Sundial. I want to get a sense of what's going on with you right now. Classes are going to start next week. They kick back in on Monday. So students are already, I'm sure, thinking, I want more break. I was that way, I know. But Marlene, let me start with you. What's on your mind? What are you thinking right now?
Okay, what I'm thinking right now is that we have AP and IB testing coming up.
Wait, what kind of testing?
AP and IB testing, okay. IB first. So by the end of February, we start doing our individual orals to be sent abroad to be graded. So the kids have to have a certain level of proficiency. We have certain works that they have to have read, and they need to be prepared for these exams. So yes, right now I'm thinking on where I need to take them, what is still missing there to get them ready to pass these exams.
And help me understand, how's that compared to the other all the state tests they have to take as well?
They do a lot of testing, and sometimes too much testing, because the kids, when they are testing, we don't have the amount of time needed to prepare them. So we have to cram, I'm being honest, we have to cram the students to get them where they need to be.
Too much testing. I've been hearing this for years now. Talia, you were telling me earlier, too much testing?
Yes.
How much? Did you tell me you spend how much time during your class, during the term, teaching the course and teaching for the test?
About 80%.
80%. Are you even teaching then?
I am teaching, but since my course, it's a high school requirement, I need to make sure that those kids pass the state exam.
But that's got to be frustrating. You're spending all this time teaching for a test.
It is.
There's got to be a lot of stuff you want to do. Barbara.
In addition, we now have our evaluations tied in with our VAM scores. So you better, it's not just about the students. It's also about the teacher and making sure that they make the grade.
Tell us how that works. Tell us again how your students perform on this test means what to you.
Well,
it's
50% of our evaluation. So that is critical, and it can be devastating. And I just wanted to make it clear, I absolutely adore what I do. And I wouldn't have been doing this for 29 years, even though I came into it not wanting
to. And understand
that.
I'm not really wanting to. You must love what you do, because you've been doing this for a while. All of you.
Yes,
correct. And what is the average? What, 5 to 7 years? It's at that point, a teacher is going to say, okay,
yes,
I'm in or out, right?
That's right.
Okay. Did anybody here have that moment? You got to your 5th, 6th, 7th year, and you're like, maybe it's time for me to get out. Talia, you're shaking your head. No? Barbara?
Not at that point. At different points, I question it for sure.
Yeah?
Oh, for sure.
Casey,
I questioned it.
You're at 9 years.
Yeah.
Did you have that moment?
Oh, yeah.
And
frequently.
why'd you stick with it?
Well, part of it is, it's sometimes you just like feel like you're already on that train, you know? So it's just easier to keep riding it. And also part of it, even though I wanted to get off, I still felt drawn to stay, because I love the kids. I think it comes down to that. I really love talking to my students every day and seeing them inspired. And, that's just something that you can't get in a lot of professions.
I'm listening to Talia tell me that she's spending 80% of her time preparing for a test. Is that real? Are you doing that too?
I mean, every day I'm hitting something that could be on the test. That's for sure.
Help me understand. Where are you? When are you teaching? Marlene, when are you teaching anything?
Okay. I just want to comment on the amount of time we spend testing. I've been in the public system for 25 years. And I remember having kids in high school when I started in the public system that could not read. So I believe that the No Child Left Behind Act was a blessing in disguise, because even now there's more testing. I see they're leaning towards more equity in the classroom, and in the end we're there for the students. So testing may be hard and it may be interrupting the kids that are advanced, but it's also helping the ones that don't have.
I want you to think of this. We're going to go to break here. I want you to think of this. If I put you all in charge, how much testing is right? How much should we really be doing? Think about that question. And when we come back, I want to hear from you, your thoughts on that. Again, we're talking education today, but we're talking to teachers. I have a teacher panel here. We're hearing from teachers all over South Florida. We want to hear from you. All more of that coming up on Sundial here on WLRN.
Mrs. Santos says, how do we get the students in on Saturdays for remedial reading? Well, I'll tell you how. We'll go to their homes. We will talk to their folks. If their folks can't read, they can come in too. The only way we're going to get anything done is to get everyone involved. And that goes for all of you.
Everyone in this section. Put both your hands above your heads. Raise your hands. Put them up. You people represent the 70% of our students who just failed the practice exam. 70%. But that is not their failure. I don't blame them. The failure is yours.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Pop quiz to my teacher panel. What's that movie? Anybody? Want to take a shot at that? Or who's the actor?
It sounded like Morgan Freeman.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's one. Casey's got that. Anybody remember? I know. It's going back. Come on.
And it's right there at the tip of my tongue.
That was Morgan Freeman and Lean on Me.
Lean on Me.
Yeah. Again, movie going back to the 80s.
Yes.
One of those fun movies. Again, you know what? There were those movies that came out where you had that. And that's based on a true story, by the way. It was based on a true principle, a real principle. But again, controversial in that, you know, here's this principle. Tough. Comes into a school, a troubled school, dealing with low grades, low testing grades, violence and drugs. He goes in there and he cleans up, but he's tough. He was very tough. And you know what? I'm curious, could you have a principal like that? A principal who comes in with a megaphone all the time, yelling at his teachers, getting on students' cases, locking doors to make sure students don't leave. I don't know if that would work today, right? No? It's a movie, I know.
Yeah.
All right. Again, we're talking education today, and I've got a panel of teachers joining me in studio from all the districts here in South Florida, Palm Beach County, Broward County, Miami-Dade County, and Monroe County. And also, we want to hear from you, 800-743-9576. Talking about education, all the different issues, we want to hear about any issue. Let's go to the phones first real quick, because I did give my teachers an assignment. Let's see what they have to say when we get back. Let me start with Robert in Davie. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I kind of have a unique perspective on teaching in South Florida. Not so much that I'm a teacher, but my wife's a teacher in South Florida, and she also spent a good deal of time teaching in Canada. And I think one of the biggest differences between Canada and South Florida in terms of teaching, in that Canada, it's treated as a profession that's highly competitive, it's well paid, there are great benefits, and there's a large respect from the general society towards teachers. And in South Florida, it doesn't really seem to be treated as a profession by the general public. This is evidenced by some of the things that student parents have said to my wife as she's taught, some of the comments from the general public. And I think that one of the things that we could do to try to improve teacher retention and teachers in the classroom that's a little bit intangible is to improve society's outlook on it so that people in general society treat it more as a profession.
All right. Robert, I think I lost you there. I apologize. Line just went dead. But we got a lot of what you said there. So his wife is a teacher in public schools, but also taught in Canada. I did see it was from a few years ago. Forbes magazine had said, you know, there was a survey that was done and about 50 to 55% of people actually had a positive view of the teaching profession. That's not bad, but that's not great. Marlene, what did you want to comment on that?
Yes, over the years, I've heard students, seniors, talking about if you can't, you teach. So they look at us as, oh, you didn't pass your SATs, or somebody gave you a scholarship to go someplace. That's why you're going to teaching. They have no clue that we are expert in our field. So yes, there is a misconception of who is teaching.
Has anybody ever said that to you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and what's your response? How do you tell them? What do you tell them?
I tell them I have your children during my classrooms.
All right. Before I go back to the phones, I had an assignment for all of you. If I put you in charge and we talk about the issue of testing, what's a good amount of testing? What's enough testing? Dahlia?
I would say maybe once a year, and whatever they get on it, that should be their score. A lot of times if they don't reach a score, then there's retakes, and retakes are 3-4 times a school year, so the kid has to be taken out of a class to retake a test.
Should they be held back if they don't pass the test?
Yes.
Okay, Barbara.
See, and I think that there should be a balance of testing, but also alternative forms of assessment. When you deal with an ESE population, I've had lots of inclusion
English,
kids.
English, Spanish,
Speakers of other languages, all of that. You can't measure growth just because, you know, a standardized test necessarily. Plus, a child could have a very bad day. I had a student whose father was murdered, and then the mother was threatened on the phone while she, you know, right before she took her exam. And I was like, why are you fidgeting? And so how do you say, hey, that's a valid score? And wow, her English teacher or math teacher must have done a really poor job because of that. It's like, really? Or, you know, we have to address certain issues. And socioeconomic is a big one, and especially in Miami-Dade County.
There's got to be a balance.
There has to be a balance.
Too much right now, but a balance.
Yes.
Marlene, I put you in charge. What's fair?
There have been a lot of tendency to over-test students, but I do feel like my colleagues here that the testing should be limited, and maybe there should be one end-of-year testing. There were groups, I remember this Summer Hill experiment way back there in England, where kids just didn't go to school and they just showed up and took a test and went into medical school and whatever. So I think sometimes the classrooms can be too controlling, and sometimes we can stifle growth within the classroom by over-testing.
Look, I know I'm the outsider, but I'm sitting here thinking to myself, she's spending 80% of the time preparing for a test. Casey, before I get to you, we do have this Twitter response from one of our listeners, Joe, responding. The problem with testing is that it's become punitive. Testing should be a diagnostic tool that drives instruction, not something that hurts students and teachers. Casey, your take. What's fair in testing?
I agree with, you know, one or two tests a year, and the alternative pathways for testing too. There's more than one way of showing mastery over the standards and the subjects than a standardized test. I mean, these kids are over-tested. And I teach the ninth grade English right now, and most typical ninth graders take 9 standardized tests in 1 year. And that is more standardized tests than I took in my entire high school career. I mean, that's crazy.
So, again, when are you teaching? If they're taking that many tests, what are you teaching?
Yeah, I mean, well, if you're doing it well, it doesn't seem like you're teaching to the test. You know, if you teach the curriculum, you teach the standards, you can kind of integrate test-taking practices in that curriculum. So I don't like directly teach to the test that often.
Barbara.
But in some schools, especially if they're not making the grade, you do not have that professional freedom. And I was at a school where all of us had to be on the same lesson plan each day. And the first 10 minutes, you had to have an icebreaker. I mean, it was very regimented. And in that, you know, you're wondering, you know, what profession do you have where, hey, at the end of the week, I'm going to give you your paycheck based on, you know, how well you did on that test.
To Dahlia.
Right. In math, we all have, there's like 5 or 6 of us that teach the same subject, and we have to have common assessments. All of us have to be giving the exact same test to all our students, and all our students are different.
You said something interesting, Marlene, though.
Yes, I agree with what they're saying, but again, what about those kids that if teachers were in course or forced into preparing them for tests, would just fall through the cracks and don't receive the education, because there would be a tendency to target certain, I don't know, ethnicity, and just let them just pass them through without them really having the skills to survive.
Barbara.
In society.
And there we go again. Teachers are always judged by the lowest common denominator. I believe that the majority of the teachers would do the right thing, and we would help all of those students learn. And you know, I don't think a test can necessarily measure that, or taking away a teacher's professional freedom. We are professionals, just like the caller had said about Canada and the way that they look at teachers. There has to be a paradigm shift in that way. In addition, your Hollywood reference, you know, having your, you know, all these different people, Hollywood hasn't done us any real favor, because you know Hollywood always looks as a teacher as this self-sacrificing person that eventually gets sick or fired or something terrible happens to them. How can that be when this is a profession that every profession is based on? So you know, we are the beginning of that. And I think once you hire your teachers, you need to give them that freedom because you've done the hiring and you should expect the best.
You talk about freedom. That was something interesting. You talk about freedom, and I was curious as to how much freedom do you have setting your curriculum? Because you talk about that you in some cases are told what you need to do this time. How much time to spend on everything?
Yes, that
Do you even set a curriculum?
That was at a different school.
Okay.
Now, I made a drive over the causeway, over the Rickenbacker Causeway. I'm at a school of choice.
Okay.
And I do get professional freedom.
Because you're at a magnet school.
Yes, but we get to, each child has to apply to come to that school. So it's not real fair comparison, but I understand it because I spent the majority of my career in schools where we didn't have that. Our school has always been an A school. So you get these kids that are well supported, they're well fed, they have more than two meals a day, and they're not just dependent on what they eat at school. You know, they're not afraid of being, deported right. as well, because yeah. that's a big factor here too. And these kids come to you with all of these pressures. So I think there are a lot more, it's a lot more that we need to do in a society than just, you know, here, blame it on the teacher.
Well, and we're not going to count on Hollywood to give us an accurate count, but for entertainment purposes. Marlene.
Yes, and as teachers too, we just can't blame it on the socioeconomic condition or the political environment. We always have to remember what's their calling for in the classroom, and we just have to hit it head on once we're in there, because we can't just lump all of the external factors as to really what's going on in the classroom.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. So you're going to have 20 to 30 students in the classroom.
Right.
They're all coming from different places.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to know pretty quickly what those situations are.
Right.
There's no one size fits all.
Right. There's none. And we can go, okay, that person, they're from the neighborhood. They're not going to pass, you know, we can't take care of them. Or these are going to be the students I'm going to recommend to take AP classes or to go into the IB program. We have to quit that type of way of viewing our students and see each one as being able to succeed at all levels. And I think we still have a lot to work on that when it comes to us as teachers.
All right, again, 800-743-9576. Love to hear your thoughts on the education, or the profession of teaching, let me put it that way. Whether you're becoming a teacher, you are a teacher, you left the profession, you've retired. Share your thoughts. Let me go over to Mary in Boca Raton. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
I'm looking for some advice from your panel of teachers. I'm a mother of five girls. My oldest is a brand new first year teacher. She had the fortunate opportunity to be going through the IB program and had wonderful teachers who inspired her. And that fire caught, she decided to pursue teaching. She got her bachelor's in three. She went ahead and got her master's. She's certified, and she's now teaching in Broward County, teaching IB students at one of the schools that she attended. And she has been completely overwhelmed by the amount of requirements for testing and what they're required to do. And I've heard your panel, somebody said 80% of their time is taught, you know, teaching to test. What advice could you give a first year teacher? Because again, she is so passionate. She wanted to be part of their learning experience, but I want to encourage her to not give up keep this momentum going.
All right. Well, first year, it's going to be tough. Mary, thank you so much for the call. Let's find out. Let's hear from our teachers. Casey, let me start with you. You hear this, she's sitting there saying, you know, 1 year in, but all these struggles, there's a lot of struggle, there's a lot of challenge. How do you stay motivated? What advice do you give her?
I think there's two overall things I could say to first year teachers. It's number one, find your mentor that works for you. Finding an older teacher that you can go to vent, to ask questions, to lean on, to run things by. I mean, that's so essential. And then number two, you know, if she was an IB student, I'm sure she was a great student and maybe even a little bit of a perfectionist. And your first year teaching is not going to be perfect. it's impossible, and you're going to struggle, and you're going to feel like you're a fraud, and some days are going to be great, and some days are going to be horrible, and that's okay. There's a lot of teachers right now that expect perfection of themselves on a daily basis, and I think that, you know, they're just being too hard on themselves. It's okay to fail, and you have to model how to fail for your students, that it's okay to fail, to recognize that, and then to work from that.
And by the way, important. Just so people know, an IB student.
Yeah.
What is that? So people know.
International Baccalaureate.
Okay.
Baccalaureate. It's like one step above AP, okay. You know.
All right. I wanted to, phone lines are lit up. We're going to get to some calls here in just a moment. I want to take some comments that have come up online. This one from Dory Martin in Delray Beach. This is an edited version. She had a lot to say. I started teaching in Miami in 1996. I was promised many things, which made up for the low wages on the front end, and we could look forward to more substantial wages and a good retirement later in our careers. But that did not happen. When you factor in the ultra-excessive testing schedule and the lack of support from administrators, you have a scenario where no one is happy and everyone feels used and abused. After just under 22 years, with a master's degree and a whopping $59,000 salary, I left teaching forever. Again, Dory Martin, she used to teach in Miami, now lives in Delray Beach. Who wants to comment on that?
I feel her Barbara. Pain. I definitely understand exactly where she's coming from. We're doing a lot more for less money. And when we first got in, because she's in that 20-year range, we were promised, we understood the salary wasn't going to be great, but we would be taken care of in our retirement. What I see, one of the schools, they told us, well, if you will teach an extra class, you won't get paid extra, but we won't have to lose any of our elective teachers. And, you know, we have teachers, we love each other, we do. We support one another, so we didn't want to lose any teachers. So we were teaching an extra period without getting paid for it. And so we are doing a lot more with less money.
First of all, the fact Dory lasted 22 years.
That's amazing.
Angry.
And we shouldn't have let her go. She had too much to offer. All that experience, because, you know, you gain experience throughout that whole, through your... years of teaching.
As I mentioned before, some of the surveys showed that in the last not even 10 years, the number of people in the state of Florida that are getting teaching degrees down almost 30%. Mm-hmm. So how do you hear that? How do you convince people that they should get into this, Talia?
It's something that you have to love and dedicate yourself to.
You're going to give up a lot because mm-hmm. you love something.
It's true. But at the end of the day, I have a folder of little notes from kids that I've had throughout the years. And it's that one kid that leaves you the note saying, thank you for teaching me this. You know, I didn't understand it before, but now I do.
You've met people like Dory, right?
Yes.
Where's that coming from?
Maybe not support from other people. Just she feels unappreciated.
It could also be the environment. This is Marlene. It could always be the environment that she was working with. Maybe her co-teachers weren't there for her.
I wonder too, when you run into, you know, your peers, and they are at that point wherever they are in their career, and they're thinking, "I am so done with this. I want out." What do you talk to them about? What do you say to them?
I would remind them of the first reason they decided to teach. And I would try to have them recall the good moments that you have in the classroom, like those kids coming back 5 years after and reminding you how much you influence who they are today. So these are the little things that you can't put a money value on, but they do help us, they keep us going.
Again, we heard a lot of anger, though, in that one comment. Let me take another comment. This one, a Facebook comment. Again, you can find us, WLRN Sundial on Facebook. Judith Gardnerberg teaches, teachers should be rewarded better. They have a big responsibility on their hands to inspire the future of humanity. Should be rewarded better. That's the point of her note. This kind of goes back, though, Barbara, what you were saying a second ago. So much is dependent on your test, on how the students test on you. But is that fair of what Judith said? You guys aren't rewarded enough.
We aren't. We definitely aren't. And you know what? And my favorite Christmas gift that the kids gave me were notes, with the little love notes that they gave me. But you can't eat a love note. You know, when you're trying to start out and you're a couple and you have to take in a roommate, I mean, where is the fairness in that? I'm sorry, but you ended up not going into teaching. There must be a reason.
800-743-9576. Let's go to, I've got Paula in Fort Lauderdale who's been waiting. Paula, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say I am an engineer graduate, and I've had trouble finding a job after school, and I wish there was an easier avenue to go into teaching, you know, when you have a certain degree. You know, it kind of seems like, oh my God, I have to study calculus and all this, and I have to take a teacher certification. I just wish it was a little easier. I do have to say, though, I have a child, and she's in public school, and I really appreciate public school. If I could change one thing, I just wish there were more languages incorporated into public school.
Teaching like more languages.
Yeah, dual language, and like Meatless Monday. It sounds a little millennial, but.
That's all right. We are up with the times. That's okay.
Yeah, that's the story.
Paula, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate the comment.
Thanks for waiting.
You know what, before we hit another break real quickly, I also wanted to ask real quick about coming back to this idea of teachers being rewarded, but this is South Florida, and we do this story a lot. Life in South Florida is expensive, and I've heard from teachers who, you know what, they're still living with their parents. They're in their 30s and 40s. They're living with their parents. So is that fair? But hey, why are you teaching in South Florida if it's that expensive? Maybe go somewhere else. I don't know. Casey, let me start with you, because you live in Key West.
Yeah.
And before that, you were in Hawaii.
Yeah.
How do you make that work?
Well, luckily enough, my husband is active duty Coast Guard. So, you know, we're guaranteed military housing and a military stipend for housing.
All right, but you've got to know teachers who are struggling.
Oh, yes. I have one of my friends down here. She's a teacher. You know, it's hard to find housing down here, number one. But then when you do find it, the amount of rent is just ludicrous. She pays, I think, like around $1,200 for an efficiency, you know, with barely a kitchenette. That is absurd. And a lot of people will say, well, you came from Hawaii, you know, and it's more expensive to live in Hawaii than down here. And I got to be honest, it's not. The cost of living is the same. But I will say the rent in Hawaii was so much more affordable. So it was easier for teachers to afford their rent in Hawaii than it is down here. In just the 4 years that I've been here, I've known a lot of my coworkers that have left because they cannot afford to stay teaching down here.
That's amazing that I just heard that for the first time ever, that it's cheaper to live in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I was saving money in Hawaii. I'm not saving money here.
Whoa. I think a number of people may have just changed their minds and said, hey, maybe it's time to move to Hawaii.
Well, hey, they're always, they always need teachers.
All right. Again, talking about education today, we're talking specifically about, you know, really the perspective from teachers on what it's like to be a teacher today in South Florida. And we're getting some great calls and comments. Keep them coming. Find us on Facebook, WLR and Sundial. We have this one comment real quickly from Maria, Diane, Christina. She says, I'm surprised how behind South Florida school districts are as far as bringing their pedagogy and classroom environments into the 21st century. I do not see the resources or the progressive attitude needed for current applications of creating cooperative learning environments. All American education needs to restructure the way teachers administer and foster student learning. All right, I'll ask my teachers in a moment what they think of that. All of that coming up and more of your calls here on Sundial on WLRN.
Pay attention, because I do not want to have to fail you. I thought you didn't believe in grades.
Of course I believe in grades. I was testing you, and you passed. Good work, Summer. 4.5 gold stars for you. Now listen, you guys, you know what? Normal kids would have been stoked to slack off, but not you guys, because you're not normal. You're special. And because I think you guys have the right attitude, I think it's time we started our new class project.
A science project?
No, it's called Rock Band.
Is this a school project?
Yes, and it's a requirement. And it may sound easy, but nothing could be harder. It will test your head and your mind and your brain, too.
Will other schools be competing?
You could say that.
Barbara, you know which one that's from.
Yeah, School of Rock.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jack Black, School of Rock, still also another favorite. Very funny. I wish I had a teacher like that. You guys are fantastic. I'm just saying. One teacher, one class where you could slack off and have fun. Again, welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez, talking about education today, and joined in studio and also from our studios in Key West with a panel of teachers from all throughout South Florida. By the way, they're all high school teachers. So, and we are talking about some of the issues that they are facing today as teachers. I want to go back to the phones real quickly here. I'm going to start. I've got Michelle, who is a teacher in Miami, in North Miami. Michelle, thank you so much for waiting. I appreciate it. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. These ladies have been lovely, and everything that they have said is definitely on point. However, the few angry calls that you've gotten, somewhat angry calls, yeah, are valid. Unfortunately, public education has become so politicized lately, particularly in our state and now nationally, that we're sort of working against forces that are so much greater than us. Teachers have had to become politically active because otherwise, basically, they're forgotten and downgraded as a profession. This has been a problem since the recession 10 years ago, and it doesn't seem to be letting up. A lot of our funding now in this state is going to charter schools, not to public schools. And, you know, private school, people who can afford to send their children to private school, they vote. They don't have to worry about issues about public education. But it's the underprivileged and those people who really need public education that, you know, that their children are being failed by these political measures.
And you're still teaching, Michelle?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And are you teaching at a public school? Because you mentioned charter schools.
I do. I teach in an elementary public school. It's a wonderful school. I love my students. I love my administration, my coworkers. But we're often, you know, have our backs against the wall with lack of resources, the VAM scoring, the value-added measure, which, you know, I have seen incredibly talented, incredibly hardworking teachers get highly effective instead of get effective on their reviews instead of highly affected, simply because they are such good teachers that they get the kids with the lowest scores, the lowest performances. And those kids struggle every day to make the grade.
All right.
Well, and so in a way, those kids and those teachers really, you know, they try, but they can never make that grade.
All right, so
and that's money that comes out of the teacher's pocket.
You brought up a couple of things, and they want to respond to you. Michelle, thank you. I really appreciate your patience, and thanks for those comments.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right, so let's go around the table, because some of you were reacting to that. So, you know, Marlene, let me start with you.
Yes, I'm responding to the VAM scores and the way they grade teachers. I think this is creating a negative environment within the schools. My daughter is also a teacher, so I get feedback from her school as well. And teachers are fighting against each other to get the students that are going to perform well so that they can get their bonus at the end of the year. So the struggle, the fight among teachers now to get the better classes and the better student has created a negative environment. So instead of helping...
And how does that work, by the way? So you want the better students because it gives you the better chance. So
right.
Then how exactly do you get
because
to pick?
Because at the end of... Well, a lot of the teachers, they would go and they play dirty. They become friends with the APs and ask for specific classes, classes where they know that the higher performing students are going to be taking, so they can teach those courses. And nobody wants to teach the kids that are in ESOL, for example, because these kids aren't going to get high scores on the end of course exam. So a lot of schools, a lot of teachers are carrying a lot of anger. And I can specifically think about four different schools, teachers that I know that have come up with these issues, that they didn't give me this AP class, they gave it to the other person, and now they give me these students that are going not to perform well on the final, on the EOC, and then it's going to mess up my score, and it's about the teacher's score now.
So we're just shuffling kids around, and people are just, they want the best kids, because that's going to give you the best chance. Barbara.
But if your children score very high, it's very hard to measure adequate, you know, gains when they're already in the 90th percentile. So you can have, you know, the teachers who are teaching the high performing kids not showing growth with their kids because it's like, all right, they're at 98th percentile.
It's not
so
just
if they go to
the
97th.
Test.
Yeah.
They,
so
they have to show
so
growth.
This whole formula, and nobody can quite figure it out. That's the interesting thing. How they figure out also the adequate growth with these, you know, with these scores and things.
The other thing we heard from Michelle, the last caller, was that, you know what, they're under-resourced. They're not having a resource. Now, she's teaching at an elementary school, so I've heard about teachers who are spending a lot of money out of their own pocket for resources. In high school, is that still the problem, Dahlia?
Yes, I have a little cup with pencils, and by a month later, all my pencils are gone, and I have to give them paper and always refill all the time.
You have to buy your own pencils.
Correct.
Or write a grant. There's the education fund that is wonderful for public education, but you have to initiate that, and you can look for funding through the education fund in Miami-Dade County, which is pretty good, but the lack of resources.
And Broward County also gives what's called lead money. At the beginning of the school year, they do give us a certain amount of money that we have to spend, and we have to show the receipts that these are the supplies that we spent. But once that money's up, then it comes out of our pocket.
It's never enough.
Correct.
It's never enough. You know what, Casey, real quickly, I wanted to ask you also as well on this issue that we heard from the last comment. I wanted to come back to the last comment that we had on Facebook, where basically, you know, they were trashing South Florida's school, the school districts here, again, because the environment's wrong. We have to catch up to the 21st century, you know, that American education in general has to catch up to, you know, the rest of the world. But how we test compared to the rest of the world, I want your take, I want to hear from everybody, is are we doing right by our students?
I feel like we are.
But we're doing a lot of testing. Come on, I'm going to play skeptic with you.
That's perfectly fine. I think it's hard to compare our huge country with all of the demographics and factors that we have to what's going on in a much smaller country that's completely different. I mean, you're comparing apples to oranges. That's just not fair. But we are improving. So the research does show that maybe we're not up to snuff with other countries, but we are improving.
Whoa,
and I think
we're not up to snuff with the other countries. This is America. Hold on a second. Marlene.
Yes, I totally agree with her. I'm from Nicaragua. And there you, students that have disabilities don't come to school. Students that have learning problems don't come to school. And I'm sure that there are a lot of other countries in which just the elite, the top students go to the school. So they're going to perform well. We live in a society that try to reach all children. And so because we have so much coming into the pot, the performance level is not going to be as strong as the countries where only a few selected students are competing.
All right. Only because of time, real quickly, Dahlia, I just wanted to take your take very quickly is, you know what, you sound optimistic. This is a career for you. You're not thinking of anything else.
No.
No? What advice do you give anybody who wants to be a teacher right now?
Stick with it. Get support if you need some. Find that mentor that would help you for the long run.
All right, Barbara.
Am I sticking with it?
No.
I'm going to stick it out for retirement. I would also encourage the young people to get politically motivated and to make changes.
All right, we've heard from Barbara Kinash. She's from Mast Academy in Miami-Dade County. Dahlia Montes de Oca, from Western High School in Broward County. Marlene Enriquez from Suncoast High School in Palm Beach County. And Casey Sublet marks. You know what, Casey? Help me.
Sublet marks.
Sublet marks. Thank you. From Key West High School. I really appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. Really, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you on Monday.